ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमः विष्णुवाय कृष्णप्रसाद गुरुदेव श्री माधवाक्षवरानंद स्वामी की नामिनी नमस्ते सरस्वती देव गौरवाणी प्रसरणे निर्विशेष शनिवार चरणे श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे श्री श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 12 चैप्टर 2 वर्स 26 आरभ्य भवतो जन्म यावन् नन्द अभिषेक्षणम् एतात् वर्ष सहस्रम् तु शतम् पञ्चदशोत्तरम् आरभ्य भवतो जन्म यावन्नन्दाभिषेक्षणम् एतद्वर्षसहस्रम् तु शतम् पञ्चदशोत्तरम् आरभ्य बिगिनिङ्ग् फ्रम् भवत आफ् योर् गुड् सेल्फ् परीक्षत् जन्म बर्त् यावत् अप् अण्टिल् Nanda, of King Nanda, son of Mahanandi, Abhisechanam, coronation, Etat, this, Varsha, years, Sahasram, 1,000, two, and Shatam, 100, Panchadasottaram, plus 50. Translation from your birth up to the coronation of King Nanda, 1,150 years will pass. Purport, although Sukadev Goswami previously described approximately 1,500 years of royal dynasties, I understood that some overlapping occurred between kings there for the present chronological calculation to be taken as authoritative. 627-28. Of the seven stars forming the constellation of the seven sages, Puloha and Kratu are the first to rise in the night sky. If a line running north and south are drawn through their midpoints, whichever of the lunar mansions this line passes through is said to be the ruling asterism of the constellation for that time. The seven sages will remain connected with that particular lunar mansion for 100 human years. Currently, according to during your lifetime, they are situated in a nakshatra called Magha. The Supreme Lord Vishnu was brilliant like the sun and was known as Krishna. When he returned to the spiritual sky, Kali entered this world and people then began to take pleasure in sinful activities. As long as Lord Sri Krishna, the husband of the goddess of fortune, touched the earth with his lotus feet, Kali was powerless to subdue this planet. Wherefore, although even during the time of Lord Krishna's presence on earth, Kali had entered the earth to a slight extent through the impious activities of Duryodhana and his allies, Lord Krishna consistently suppressed Kali's influence. Kali could not flourish until Lord Krishna had left the earth. When the constellation of the seven sages is passing through the lunar mansion of Magha, the age of Kali begins. It comprises 1,200 years, the demigods. When the great sages of the Saptarshi constellation pass from Magha to Purvashar, Kali will have its full strength beginning from King Nanda and his dynasty. Those who scientifically understand the past declare that on the very day that Lord Sri Krishna departed for the spiritual world, the influence of the age of Kali began. Purport, although technically Kali Yuga was to begin during the time of Lord Krishna's presence on earth, this fallen age had to wait meekly for the departure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation, from your birth up to the coronation of King Nanda, 1,150 years will pass. Of the seven stars forming the constellation of the seven stages, Puloha and Kratu are the first to rise in the night sky. If a line running north and south were drawn through their midpoint, whichever of the lunar mansions this line passes through is said to be the ruling astrosphere in the constellation for that time. The seven stages will remain connected with that particular lunar mansion for 100 human years. Currently, during your lifetime, they are situated in the nakshatra called Magha. The Supreme Lord, Vishnu, is brilliant like the sun and is known as Krishna when he returned to the spiritual sky. Kali entered the world and people then began to take pleasure in sinful activities. As long as Lord Sri Krishna, the husband of the goddess of fortune, touched the earth with his lotus feet, Kali was powerless to subdue the planet. Whenever the constellation of the seven stages is passing through the lunar mansion of Magha, the age of Kali begins. It comprises 1,200 years of demigods. When the great sages of the Saptarshi constellation pass from Magha to Parvasha, Kali will have full strength beginning from King Nanda and his dynasty. Those who scientifically understand the past declare that on the very day that Lord Sri Krishna departed for the spiritual world, the influence of the age of Kali began. So here we find specific chronology mentioning 1,150 years from Parikshit's time to the coronation of King Nanda. So that gives some sort of years by which the historians can measure things. The other measurement is by some calculations made in the sky according to nakshatras. There's 27 constellations. Of course, there's more constellations than that, but 27 are there in the zodiac ring. And of course, there are also 12 major zodiac signs, but then these minor divisions, there's 27 nakshatras or constellations, and the one mentioned here is Magha. So Magha marks the beginning of Kali Yuga, and then when it passes into the nakshatra, the next nakshatra, which is Purvasha, then Kali becomes even stronger. So the different periods of time are measured in terms of these nakshatras in relation to the seven sages, stars, particular formation of stars in the sky. So, in this way, there's more or less some specific information given about the beginning of the age of Kali. Similarly, we'll find in the Mahabharata, there are particular descriptions of combinations of planets and stars, etc., given for the battle of Kurukshetra, etc. And then based on these type of things, astrologers and astronomers will calculate backwards from nowadays to find out exactly how many years ago things were. So that's one way of calculating the history, the age of different events in the past. And of course, it's all subject to a little bit of speculation also. So by these means, one can somewhat verify the scriptural descriptions of the beginning of Kali Yuga to be about 5,000 years previously when it began. And the other point made here is that Krishna, his departure, marked the beginning of Kali Yuga. Of course, that's also mentioned at the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, where the sages ask Suta Goswami, Krishna's departed along with Dharma. So what are we to do now? Now is Kali Yuga. So as long as the Supreme Lord is present, Dharma is also present. And when the Supreme Lord goes, then Dharma goes with him. Of course, the Lord also comes into the material world and teaches Dharma, so the teachings are not lost. So therefore, the answer given to the sages, what are we to do now that Kali is here and Krishna's departed with Dharma? The answer is Bhagavatam is here. So Krishna's pastimes are there, and Vedavyas and then Sukadeva Goswami have presented the Bhagavatam, which is equivalent to Krishna. So therefore, Dharma remains. However, what is that Dharma? Is it the Dharma of the kings? They established the Varnashram Dharma. Or is it the other Dharma? Krishna says at the end of Bhagavad Gita, give up all dharmas and simply surrender unto me. So, bhakti is the highest dharma. So ultimately we see that what does the Bhagavatam teach? The sages ask the question, what is the ultimate goal? What is the most beneficial thing for human beings? That's the first question they ask to Suta Goswami. And the answer is, prema is the goal. It is not artha, dharma, kama, moksha. It is prema. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also states this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he says the fifth goal, the fifth purushartha, is prema. So artha, dharma, kama belong to karma yoga, etc., varnashram, and moksha is jnana yoga. And then we have prema, that is bhakti yoga. So this is the actual goal for human beings, not the other ones. So this is exactly what the Bhagavatam presents, the highest goal, which is prema for Krishna. Not only prema for any form of the Lord, but prema for Krishna, who is Swayam Bhagavan. And the second question that the sages ask is, what is the essence of the scriptures? What do they tell us to do? The main purpose of scripture is to tell us to act. Now they present the goal, prema, but what are we to do to get prema? So, of course, the scriptures have many types of injunctions. One is to sacrifices and karma yoga or whatever like that. So that the karma yoga injunctions are there. And of course the jnana injunctions are there and the yoga injunctions are there. But the real process recommended by Krishna at the end of Bhagavad Gita is bhakti yoga. So bhakti is the sadhana or the action, the essence of scripture by which we attain the goal, which is prema. Huh? So these are fundamental themes of the Bhagavatam. So we should not be misled and think that Bhagavatam is presenting something different. Yes, it does present all sorts of other things in the 10 cantos. There are 10 subject matters and it presents all sorts of different things there. But we should understand what is the final essence of the Bhagavatam. Parikshit and is listening to, he asks the questions and Sukadeva answers. So the real thing is that ultimately the bhakti is the goal. And of course when Parikshit first asks this question, he said, what should I do now that I'm dying? And what is the answer? Hear about the Lord. Then not any, no karma yoga or jnana yoga or astanga yoga, just hear about the Lord. Worship the Lord, think of the Lord. So this is the theme of the Bhagavatam and nothing else. So when it says that Krishna has gone with Dharma and now what are we to do? The answer is the Bhagavatam is arisen. What does the Bhagavatam present? It presents bhakti. But in the Bhagavatam we'll see other things are also presented. So we may become confused. So we'll see a lot about Dharma. The Manus are instituting Dharma. Now some of them of course are also they're all devotees of sorts because they're qualified by the Supreme Lord, and some are directly devotees like Ambarish. He said, oh, this kingdom, what is it? He gave all the responsibilities to the ministers and he just worshipped the Lord. Forgot about everything else. Let them do the sacrifices, let them do all the management, and he just worshipped the Lord all day long. So he was a king who just kind of renounced his duties completely, even when he was the king. Other kings, of course, did their duty as kings and ruled over and punished the criminals, etc., and instituted dharma and management, etc. And then when they're older, they renounced and they went off to the forest, as Bharat did. And of course, Bharat attained the high stage of bhava in his renunciation and his meditation on the Lord. So they're great kings, but their duty was to institute dharma on the earth. They set up the rules for human society, a political system, etc., and class society of varnas and ashramas, etc., make sure everybody follows. Just as Parikshit did. He was the last great king, and he was inspecting the kingdom, and then he saw that Kali personified was breaking all the rules. So this is what the kings do, and this is traced in the Bhagavatam. All the Manus and their genealogies are traced from the very beginning of Svayambhuva downwards up until Krishna's time. And of course after Krishna's time, then everything decreases, and here we find in Kali Yuga, then we get up to King Nanda, and then there's all sorts of political intrigues and assassinations and everything, and the line is broken. So that's the Dharma line. It is, of course, ultimately related to the Supreme Lord because he approves it. And some of the kings are great devotees also, like Svayambhuva Manu, etc. They got darshan of the Lord. However, beyond that, of course, we have things like Jnana discussed in the third canto. Kapila spends several chapters on Jnana and liberation. And Krishna describes to Uddhava also liberation in the 11th canto, how to merge into the Brahma, etc. And at the end of the Bhagavatam in canto 12, then finally he says, now Parikshit, you've heard everything, now it's time to merge into Brahman. After you've heard everything. So Jnana is presented in the Bhagavatam also, and it may be confusing for people, especially if it's at the end and it's a conclusion like Sarvadharma Project, now it's time to merge into Brahman. So it looks a little confusing. And even yoga is presented, is a detailed description by Kapila Dev in the third canto, and also in the by Krishna to Uddhava, detailed description of the yoga siddhis, etc., and the meditation, the chakras, and giving up the merging the elements, the lower elements into the higher elements of the body, and then giving up the everything and merging everything into prakriti and isolating the atma, etc. So these techniques are also described. So Bhagavatam has something for everybody. But the devotee should understand that all of these things are incidental. And they are only aspects which sometimes can support bhakti. And of course, they're ultimately meant to lead to bhakti. But bhakti itself is the process to be followed. And that is why Krishna says at the end of Bhagavad Gita, just give up everything and do bhakti. You don't have to do anything else. So bhakti is an independent process. And that is the dharma, the para-dharma, presented by Sukadeva in the Bhagavatam. So even if nothing else is done and we do bhakti, one is perfect. And that is, of course, some people will quarrel with that. And they'll say, well, we have to follow other things, so we have to follow dharma, etc. But we see the Bhagavatam makes statements like in Devahuti, it says even, just one who chants or half chants the name of the Lord is superior to people who have done, you know, lifetimes of tapasya and going to holy places and acting as Brahmins, etc. So one who half chants the syllable on his tongue, the name of the Lord, he's superior to that already. And a person who has meditates on the lotus feet of the Lord is qualified to do the brahminical activities like performing yajnas simply by a chandala who's not even in the varnashram system, who has no dharma. Simply by thinking of the Supreme Lord's feet, he surpasses a brahmana. So in other words, the process of bhakti is independent. It doesn't need anything else, and it gives the highest effect. So there's no dependence on other things.
Of course, we will see that Krishna follows Dharma in general, and he teaches Dharma also, and follow rules and regulations, etc. So, things which are favorable for bhakti, yes, one can do as a devotee. And we see that this is exactly what Krishna does, or Chaitanya and Mahaprabhu and his followers do. They follow Dharma to some degree, whatever, follow the conventions, etc. But even if one is beyond a Varnashram system and all Dharma, he is not disqualified. He can still do bhakti. And he's not considered inferior because of that. And so therefore it says that even the Chandala, who meditates and loves the feet of the Lord, he's superior to the Brahmana. He hasn't done any Dharma at all, but yet he gets to a higher position. So this indicates the supreme position of bhakti as a process in relation to the other processes like karma, jnana, and yoga. Why, of course, is that bhakti is a purely spiritual process. The other processes are material. So they can be classed according to the gunas. Karma yoga is, of course, it engages all people. Sudras, Vaishikshatriyas, Brahmanas, so all gunas are represented. But we also know that the majority of the people are in the lower gunas, and the Brahmanas are a minority. So it's catering basically to Rajaguna and Tamaguna. Now the goal, of course, is to elevate all of these people upwards into sattvic. But it takes birth after birth after birth of, practice before they can get to sattvaguna. So, karma yoga is basically rajagun, tamagun. Meant for those people. So that is why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, oh, you're not qualified for jnana. You do karma yoga. Because the kshatriyas got a lot of rajagun in them, so... Therefore, that's the first process to follow for most people, karma yoga. Jnana yoga and astanga yoga are in sattva gun. We may think, well, jnana yoga leads to liberation. Liberation is beyond the guna, so how can jnana be in sattva gun? But that's exactly what the Bhagavatam says in 11th canto. Krishna tells us about, yes, jnana is only sattva. The practice of jnana is only sattva gunish. So in itself, it cannot give liberation. What gives liberation is not the jnana, it's the bhakti. So if the jnani does not do bhakti, he cannot get liberation. It's the mercy of Krishna that gives liberation, not Brahman. Brahman doesn't give anything. And Krishna gives the liberation to the jnani. So the jnani cannot offend the Lord, he has to accept the Lord also. And if he doesn't, he's a jnani money now. He thinks he's a jnani, he thinks he's liberated, but he's not. False in his position. So, karma yoga and all that is in tamagun, rajagun, and jnana and yoga are in sattvagun. Bhakti is the only process beyond the gunas. It is nirguna. Without that process, the other processes also don't work. So if karma yoga, if one neglects the worship of Vishnu or Krishna, then no svargaloka even, no brahmaloka, nothing. It is dependent upon bhakti to give its results. But a little bit of bhakti. And jnana also will not give liberation unless one also has a little bhakti. So other processes are dependent on bhakti to give their particular results of material benefits in karma yoga or liberation in jnana or yoga. So they're not independent processes. Bhakti is independent. And without the other processes, it gives the result, prema, which is beyond liberation. And bhakti will also give material results if you want them. You can go to Svargaloka by bhakti also. You can get liberation by bhakti also. But the devotees want only prema. So it is the highest process, independent of all the other processes. Now, one can mix the processes also. So we can do bhakti and have a little bit of jnana, then we have jnana mr. bhakti. Or we can mix a little bit of karma yoga, we can have karma mr. bhakti. But, Krishna says, I don't prefer that. I prefer the pure bhakti, without the mixture. Because bhakti is independent. It doesn't need the other things. For a pure bhakti, he says the best. So we have the four types of people in Bhagavad Gita. And then he says, but the best is the one who simply surrenders unto me. And not the karma mister or the gyan mister bhakta. So better than that is the pure bhakta. And if we do pure bhakti, that is how we get prema. And prema means that one establishes a very nice, intimate relationship with the Lord and dasya sakti vatsalya madhurya rasas. And if you mix the bhakti, have karma mister bhakti or gyan mister bhakti, you don't get that result. What do you get? Sarsti, Salokya, Sarupya, and Shantarasa. So you don't get the spiritual world as a result of that bhakti. You don't get actual prema with the rasa in it. Higher rasas, at least. So that is why pure bhakti is recommended in the Bhagavatam. And of course in the nectar devotion we'll find that's the very keystone of the whole nectar devotion, Anya abhilashita shunya. No other desire, only desire to please the Lord. So no karma and no jnana mixed in. The qualification of that is jnana karma anavratam. It should not be covered by jnana or karma, etc., are obstructed by it. If the karma and jnana do not obstruct it, then you can do it. So there are situations where you can do the karma or the jnana and it won't obstruct. Now, what is obstruction jnana? Jnana which says merge into Brahman, that's the highest goal. That's contrary to the goal of prema, so therefore that's an obstruction. So that type of knowledge, which does not propound impersonalism as the final goal, that is okay. So we have knowledge also. Of course, we have knowledge of Krishna, knowledge of bhakti, and so on. That type of knowledge is fine. That jnana is okay. It is the jnana which leads to merging into Brahman. That is unfavorable. That covers the bhakti. So that mixture is not good. And similarly, karma. Of course, the devotees also do activities. Those activities in no way interfere with bhakti. They're part of bhakti. Hearing, chanting, remembering, deity worship, these activities, very good. They're part of bhakti, so they in no way cover bhakti, that type of karma. And even if you do the karmas in terms of varna ashram duties, if they do not obstruct the bhakti, fine. If they're not a contrary element. If they're contrary, then we cannot do them. So what is a contrary rule in the Varnashram system? Worship of devatas, worship of pitras, that's contrary. So we discard it in general. If one does those duties in the proper way, of course, then it's not an obstruction. So if you worship devatas understanding their service of Krishna only, and you give them the prasadam of Krishna, then it's okay. It's not an obstruction. So we somewhat modify those activities, then they become permissible. Or if we do the activities with complete detachment and say, well, I'm only doing this because of duty to teach others, as Arjuna does, as instructed by Krishna Bhagavad Gita, to teach others, you follow the Dharma, etc. But we're not attached to the results ourselves. Fine. Okay, one can do. But when we think that if I don't do this, I'm committing sinful activity, or whatever, and we become attached to those duties in karma yoga, then it starts covering up the bhakti. So, only in particular cases we can do these other karma again, etc. But we have to be careful how we do them so they do not interrupt or obstruct or in any way contradict the principles of devotion. So preferable is the bhakti by itself. So those things which are favorable to bhakti can be done. So we often borrow rules from the Varnashram system because they're favorable to bhakti. They in no way contradict it and they're also favorable. So we have rules of cleanliness. Rules of cleanliness for the body, those are taken from Varnashram system. Rules of social conduct. that we have to act in certain ways in society. So we follow those rules also. It's convenient, but as long as we're in the material world. Huh? So therefore we borrow these rules from Varnashram system as being favorable for our devotional development. Of course, we will find in very high stages of bhakti, even those things are neglected. So the attraction to Krishna is so strong that all other rules are forgotten. And that is why we'll see the example of the gopis. Of course, they were not really married to their husbands or whatever. Those are so-called husbands. They had husbands, and Radha had a husband called Abhimanyu who wasn't a real husband. It was a Maya husband, actually. But anyway, she thought she was married. But when they heard Krishna's flute, and they thought of Krishna, they forgot all about their husbands. And of course, they neglected Dharma. They neglected regular Dharma. So ultimately, the attraction to Krishna is the main element, and all other things are, even Dharma becomes insignificant in relation to attraction to Krishna. So they could not help but forget everything else. So they forgot their husbands, they forgot everything, and they simply went to Krishna. So that shows also that bhakti is the ultimate principle of everything, and everything is subservient to that, and may or may not be followed according to the circumstances. Now, so that is the Dharma presented in the Bhagavatam ultimately. So though Bhagavatam does present karma, jnana, yoga, the real principle is pure bhakti. That is the real principle presented in the Bhagavatam. And we should not be confused about that. So sometimes statements are made to glorify the other processes. But that is done in Bhagavad Gita also, or Krishna tells Arjuna, just do karma yoga or whatever, it's the best process, whatever. But that is contradicted by other statements later on. So similarly, the Bhagavatam makes so many different statements. But if we take the beginning and the end of the Bhagavatam, finally, the conclusion must be that we should perform pure bhakti. That is the process to follow, and not the other things. So that is the understanding we should get from all of this. So here, in this particular chapter, there's the symptoms of Kali Yuga, where everything gets destroyed. The system of Dharma is destroyed, whatever. But as Bhagavatam itself says, Kali Yuga is very bad because there's no more Dharma, there's no more kings, no qualified kings, but it has one good quality. Chanting the name of the Lord is there. Worship of the Lord, that's the good quality. So this is what Bhagavatam is presenting, that everything is bad in Kali Yuga, but the sun in Kali Yuga, that which gives illumination in Kali Yuga, is Bhagavatam, and it presents the process of bhakti and chanting the name of Krishna. Okay, any question? Well, we have avatars. We have Narada Muni, he's a Bhakti Shaktivesh avatar, and we have Kumaras again, Shakti, in charge of that. That's all I can think of. Now, Karma Yoga, because we have the different sages, the seven sages, and others like Pulastya and Kratu, etc. But never seen a personification of Karma Yoga or something like that. Why would they be attracted?
Yeah.
Oh, well, for different reasons. One reason for being attracted to jnana is that it appeals to the logical mind. So the people who are scientific are more inclined towards jnana than to bhakti. And we'll see that, therefore, the scientific community, if they're going to be a little bit religious, they're more inclined to Buddhism or something like that, which is quite impersonal or whatever, and abstract and logical in its presentation. Similarly, in India, you'll find a lot of intellectuals will go for the jnana instead of for the devotional aspect of religion. I think that's very fanatical or sentimental. So that's one thing. Logicians and other people will be attracted to jnana more than anything else. But we know that intellectuals are the minority. The most of the people are in the lower modes, like that. So lower modes, people will be attracted to, at best, if not adharma. Of course, adharma is the main attraction in Kali Yuga. No religion at all. If they're going to be attracted to religion, they'll take that religion which gives, satisfies their material desires, which would be karma yoga in India, and of course, the distorted religion in the West, where they just pray for material things from God. So that's why the karma yoga will have an attraction for some people and jnana for others. Yoga also will be attractive for other reasons, health reasons or whatever. mainly for attaining sattva gun. So yoga is, people are interested in yoga because they want peace, so they get sattva gun diet, sattva gun mentality from that. Now, the strange thing is, at the beginning of the Yoga Sutras, the second sutra after, the whole process is there to stop the functions of citta completely. That is mind, intelligence, ego, etc. Stop all of this so that you can realize Atma. And then the last sutra is, you realize Atma. But most people doing yoga don't even realize that that was the whole process. They're doing it for other reasons.
Maharaj, how do you define bhakti? Bhakti is brandy.
Bhakti?
How do you define bhakti in preaching programs? How do we say what?
It depends on who you're speaking to. It depends on who you're speaking to. If you're speaking to devotees, then you say anya abhilashya dashunya. That definition is the. That's the most precise definition of bhakti that we have. If you're speaking to non-devotees, then you just have to talk about unconditional love and things like that. Because they won't understand Sanskrit or any of these terminologies that we use. When we're performing bhakti, we do have scripture to tell us, okay, we should perform bhakti without asking when I'm praying to Krishna or chanting Hare Krishna. I'm not saying give me a car, give me a house, We're obviously trying to serve Krishna purely. So intellectually at least we have that goal. Our goal is to get that pure bhakti. However, we're also not at the pure stage. The highest pure stage is prema. And we're not at the stage. We're in the process of sadhana bhakti, which means we're not pure, obviously. So desires are obviously there somewhere in the heart or in the mind or in the ego, whatever. So we're performing bhakti. But the process is called uttama bhakti even when we're doing sadhana. As long as we understand what the goal is, and when we're practicing bhakti, we're trying to avoid asking for all these different things. Nothing is explicit. Whereas when we start mixing the bhakti, we do karma, mr. bhakti, we don't even understand what the highest goal is, and we're just trying to worship Krishna, but we're trying to get our material desires fulfilled simultaneously. We like Krishna, we understand He's supreme, but still we want to get things out of Krishna. So it's quite explicit in our desire to get material things also. So that's karma, mr. bhakti. So at least when we have knowledge, proper knowledge, through the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Goswamis, then we know what pure bhakti is. That's our goal. And we do have impurities, and those impurities may come up in the mind or whatever. Nevertheless, we continue to practice with that pure goal in mind. So it's still called pure bhakti in spite of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I supply what you lack and maintain what you have. So the real high devotee doesn't ask for anything. Huh? But if we're asking for the pleasure of the Lord, or the service of the Lord, there's nothing really wrong with that. In other words, we're asking somehow to facilitate our service to the Lord. That's not a material thing, because we're not asking for ourselves. We're asking for giving the pleasure to the Lord. So there's nothing really wrong with that. So it becomes an obstacle when we do have desires for our own enjoyment, that mind. Then it becomes mixed bhakti. And sometimes, in the verse explanation of Abhilashaka Sunya, it is explained that the word Abhilashata means, of course, desire, but it means desire in general. So bhakti should in general be free of other desires. So the commentary on that is, why generally? So the answer is, generally because sometimes the devotee does ask something from the Lord. So the devotee may say, Krishna save me, when he's in danger. Or Draupadi may say, Krishna save me, when they're trying to take away her cloth. So is that pure bhakti or not pure bhakti? Huh? So the answer is, it's still pure bhakti, even though you're asking for yourself, because it is temporary. It is not a constant desire. I'm trying to get things from Krishna. But if one is in a danger situation, one may ask for the Krishna's protection or whatever. And of course, surrendering to Krishna or taking the protection of Krishna is also one of the signs of surrender. We don't surrender to other people. We surrender to Krishna. We think of him as our protector at all times. It's also an expression of that.
Okay. Hare Krishna.